Welcome back, Mighty Vandals, to Tubs at the Club, brought to you by Snake River Stampede Whiskey, but we're going to tell you a little bit more about that later in the show. We are the Vandals affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dallas Hammer, joined today by Brian Marceau. Brian, how are we doing?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm a little surprised, maybe uneasy. It feels like it's been a while since it was just you and me recording. I think it just has to do with end of the year play. As Idaho's hosting playoff games or closing out the year at home, we go to games. It just changes the nature of us recording. Mm-hmm. So, but you and I have actually, we've been on the show together probably a little more than half the time, but not that much. So good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Martin, unfortunately, has decided to enter the transfer portal tonight. That, for anybody not paying attention, is the YouTube comments of tonight's show, because Martin's going to be bringing you an extra special bit of Tubs tomorrow. Tomorrow being National Signing Day, or if you're listening to this on podcast form, today being National Signing Day, Martin's got a whole bunch of content whipped up for that. Patty Frakes is going to be joining him with that, so make sure to be watching our socials tomorrow as we get all of that out. Brian, we are already bringing up Zach Kloss. Awesome. This is just going to be a great episode. Really loving how we're starting this one, guys. Let's just jump right into it, Brian. We're not talking Vandal basketball right now. I know that Coach Pribble's turning some things around, but we have a little bit of time before we have to start
talking coaching news here.
So we do have some news about some coaches, Brian. And let's just rip the Band-Aid right off. Idaho defensive coordinator Rob Orich has unfortunately left us. He has departed his position as the Vandal defensive coordinator and has moved on to San Diego State, where he will be coaching their edge rushers, both their outside linebackers and defensive ends. They just call it the edge over there. So he's going to be the edge coach for a Mountain West school next year. Brian, you're an immediate instant reaction to news that has been around for about a week.
Well, it's been around the Discord for about it. Well, it was that came out last week late by our Discord hashtag Only Tubs Discord listeners. It's weird to talk about this on a show because this is relatively old news for us. But we've talked on the show forever, you and I, about knowing Orich was probably one of the first guys that we were going to lose.
Mm-hmm. We talked about it last year. Thought he wasn't going to be around for year two.
He's going to approximately double his salary at San Diego State, which will in a second, we're going to have to talk about salaries, just the nature of FCS football. But look, on the one hand, obviously a little bit anxious about losing a guy who we like a lot, both of us like a ton. And we saw instantly, when that came over, a ton changed. But one of the things that changed is Orich brought immediate competence to Idaho defensively. Idaho went from a dumpster fire defensively under, what happened in the Petrino time, as almost exclusively a dumpster fire during the Petrino time, to look the first year without even having that many new guys being easily in the top half of the Big Sky defensively, probably like top quarter, but not at the top of the league. But why would they be in year one? And then this last season, Idaho is, again, one of the top defenses in the Big Sky. So because that stability, that guy, the guy who orchestrated that defense, the brains behind that defense, at least partially, because he's gone, the initial reaction is anxiety, Dallas, but not to step on the natural direction. This is also good news, though, because, look, the Big Sky, good teams have coordinators move on. This is just how it works. Either they move on and become the new head coach when coaches leave. Hey, like, for example, at Weber State, Mickey Metzl becomes head coach when Jay Hill leaves. Or, look, we saw during the Eastern time when Eastern was making their run in the early 2000s, they burned through offensive coordinators yearly, and that's just how it went. That was the hallmark of a good FCS school, is that you want to look like a school that you can advance your career in for a coach. It's kind of rare to be at place like, hey, South Dakota State is an exception because, they had Stiglmeyer forever. Montana right now is an exception because Hauk only hired his friends. So like they're just around for one last hurrah, or as long as they can make it work, which, hey, if you're in the championship, you get to make that work as long as you want. But this is how good programs the FCS look. Hey, even look at Montana State. During Jeff Choate's time, they essentially had a new OC every single year. They burned through a few DCs as well. Mm-hmm. This is how it's supposed to work if you're an elite FCS team unless you have something atypical to explain why it's not. So this is, it's good for Idaho to be on this path.
Brian, this isn't even exclusive to FCS. This is just what happens when you have a good football program. What people seem to forget is that we went through Tom Cable, Nick Holt, Dennis Erickson one more time, Rob Akey, technically four games of Jason Gesser, Paul Petrino, and now we're here at Jason Eck. Tom Cable, 0.239 winning percentage. Nick Holt, 0.217. Dennis Erickson in his second go-around, 33%. Rob Akey, 0.286. Paul Petrino, 0.34. Not a whole lot of people are knocking down doors to say, hey, I got to get the Idaho quarterbacks coach from the 2011 team where Brian Reeder and Taylor Davis and a whole bunch of other guys contributed to throw like 14 total yards. Like, this is the kind of thing that happens when your program gets good. People start wanting to take good coaches from successful programs. Jason Eck did not come here because he was like, I'm in love with Idaho. It's time to be here. Jason Eck came here because he had a little bit of familiarity, again, from being on those Nick Holt staffs way back in the day. Then he became an offensive, again, go look up his career coaching path. It's been all over the place. He lands a job at SDSU. They turn into this FCS powerhouse. He's obviously the offensive coordinator, making everything move on the offensive side of the ball because their head coach was a defensive guy. Head coach ends up retiring last year. Obviously, I think Jimmy Rogers had been probably already been told he was going to end up taking that job when Stiglmeyer retired. So Eck goes and finds a new job.
Pause real quick just on the South Dakota State point, because I actually did firsthand research on this. You're essentially right. In South Dakota State, it circles, it was understood that whenever Stiglmeyer retired, Eck was probably not going to be the head coach.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're Rob Orich and you're here as the defensive coordinator at the University of Idaho, you're not going to hang around for, again, we think the Eck family is going to be here for quite a while from the way that they've accepted Moscow in their comeback. Fingers crossed on that one. This is what happens, guys. Guys move on for better jobs. Yes, it sounds like a demotion going from defensive coordinator to position coach. But, Brian, like you said, huge salary increase. And you're moving from FCS to FBS. This is just what happens. Matt Entz is leaving the top of the profession, multiple national titles at North Dakota State, for a Power 4 linebacking job. Like, this is just what happens. If you want to advance your career, especially if you're looking at Rob Orich, you're looking at, honestly, on paper, Idaho goes from Mike Bresky and honestly terrible defenses for most of the time he was here. Orich comes in and immediately turns this defense into the strength of the program. The defense is why Idaho made it as far as they did, defense and special teams. It's why Idaho made it this far. So unless you're going to go get a head coaching job in the FCS, if you want to move your career along, where do you go? You go to the FBS. You take that money and you go get it. Unfortunately, like, yeah, that sucks, guys, but like, people don't have the ties to Moscow that we do as alumni. Like, you got to do what's right for you. I love the place I work. If somebody called me today and told me that I could do less work for double the pay, I would take that immediately. And I'd tell my boss, hey, really sorry, but this is a way better opportunity for me. It opens a whole lot more doors. Same concept. It sucks, but this is a good thing, Brian. It's good that our coaches are moving on, not because they're getting fired. Steve Axman kind of ringing the bell, anybody? It's good to see somebody moving on to greener pastures rather than moving on because, well, we're circling the drain of Idaho football again. Might as well replace the chairs on the Titanic while we're at it.
So, and hey, we missed the other coach. Thomas Ford is leaving too. Special teams coordinator, running backs coach. Thomas Ford, it was announced on his official Twitter. But again, if you're a hashtag only Tubbs member, patreon.com/TubbsTheClub. This is old news for you. Thomas Ford, he's going to be the running backs coach at Oregon State. I believe he's supposed to be tripling his salary. And hey, if you're a viewer, you can see this. Dallas is zooming in. If you're a listener, we're just going to have to kind of narrate this. Look, this is the economics of FCS football we're about to cover, which is, hey, why are we losing coaches? Why are they getting this higher salary? You guys got to understand, Idaho does not have shitty salaries in the FCS. Jason Eck, when he was at South Dakota State, from what I recall during our research of when Eck was coming over, as a coordinator, he did not quite clear $100,000. Well, hey, Idaho paid Rob Orich $116,000 last year. As a coordinator at this level, that's a very good salary. Luke Schleissner, $120,000 as a coordinator. Very good salary at the FCS level. But a guy like Orich, he's going to more than double his salary going to San Diego State. You want to look through the roster. I can slam through it really quick. Ray Osuega, he coaches some on the line. $46,000 a year for Osuega. Cody Booth, O-line coach, $81,000. Jason Eck, when you factor in media, he's around $300,000. But look, Orich is now going to be paid comparable to Eck, except he's only going to be coaching the edges. So even just in an economic standpoint, your responsibilities go down and your salary goes way up. Thomas Forbes at $78,000. Stanley Franks coaching the corner, the DBs, he's at $57,000. Bobby J coaching the safeties, he's at $75,000. We can probably stop there. I guess last one I want to hit is Matt Linehan coaching wide receivers, $46,000. It's people just can't afford, you can't afford to buy a house at $46,000. That's lower than a starting teacher salary. Yep. For if you're in Washington, it's pretty dang close to lower than a starting teacher salary in Idaho. Not quite, but like that's the comparison. Yep. So it just money wise, it doesn't make sense for a lot of these guys can't afford to say no to like tripling your salary. Yeah. And secondarily, Dallas, which you hit on earlier, there's no exact clear career path out of the FCS to head coaching positions of the FBS. If that's what you want to do, the only clear path to being an FCS coach is that you want to be a head coach. That's what it fulfills for you. But you know, you talked about Entz. He's at a very good school doing very well, North Dakota State. Well, now he's going to be linebackers coach. And I don't say that as a put down. It's that it's not simple understanding how these guys move their careers because there's not a single career path. So a guy like Orich, what he probably sees in San Diego State, one, is like Idaho. I think he sees a brain dead rebuild, as in a place that has resources that should be doing better than they are. And then if he's successful at that rebuild, that probably opens coordinator doors to him at other schools. Well, look, a lot of FCS head coaches do become coordinators at the FBS level if they move, but that's if you're kicking ass in the playoffs, man. So if you're a guy like Orich, it'd be dumb to say no to these opportunities. Like, hey, ditto Thomas Frank. Or sorry, Thomas Ford. Good Lord. I read two names in a row. Thomas Ford has had a ton of coaching experience. He was a head coach at Simon Fraser too. You know, he's a motivated dude. Mm-hmm. You know, he wants to move along. Well, if he has hopes of becoming a head coach, he has to jump up to this level because that changes what future, you know, applicant pools think of a guy like Thomas Ford.
Well, Brian, the other thing to note here is, and I don't say this lightly, Idaho fucking sucked before Jason Eck came around. This program was fucking terrible for a very long time. Paul Petrino had one good year where, again, it's fantastic that they won a bowl game that year. They beat a bunch of nobodies that were on the schedule. And hey, you play who you play. That's just how it worked. But this program has not been any good. This coaching staff comes in and immediately they get to the FCS playoffs twice. They become the number four seed this year. You're trying to tell me like a guy like Thomas Ford or Rob Orich aren't going to be able to find other coordinator jobs at this level if they wanted to ever come back. Let's say that their move up into the FBS fails for both of them. You can't tell me that Rob Orich isn't going to be able to find a defensive coordinator job probably in this conference like that. Same with Thomas Ford. I mean, did you see Idaho special teams this year? Anybody watching this? Like, this is a job that these two have proven they can succeed at and can succeed very well at. So moving on to the FBS, getting that huge payday and trying to further their careers, like, this is the kind of thing that you can fall back on now at this point. Like, let's say Jason Eck somehow completely fails the next 4 years as the Idaho head coach and gets fired. You can't tell me that people aren't going to be knocking down his door asking him to become the offensive coordinator somewhere. Like, this is just how this works, guys. Guys aren't going to stick around here forever. It is what it is. It's much better to see them moving on for good reasons rather than just adding to the list of people that got fired at Idaho.
Okay, which hey, two points so we can pivot, because I think listeners understand, like we people are going to move. That's the way the FCS works. We talked about the rationale. Mm-hmm. We're good there. So from the Idaho end, one, hey, Vandal PTSD rears its head all the time. And what I want to bring up here is I don't think people should be nervous about these changes. I think you should understand that as positive that these guys are moving on, and that signifies Idaho as a place to potentially come to move on with your career. Secondarily, Jason Eck was able to put together a home run staff when Idaho was dog shit. If Eck could do it back then, he can pull some guys to Idaho off a top eight finish. So, I mean, there's not a huge amount to say at this point, other than Eck did this when I think the degree of difficulty was higher. I expect he's going to be able to do it again with a degree of difficulty lower, but this is just part one of the things head coaches have to do with this level. And at all levels, like you said, coordinators move on. We'll be able to pull from a lot of places. Even look at our own coaching staff. Idaho pulled the OC from San Diego, Tyler Sutton, and the DC from San Diego. Hey, those are both FCS schools. That's Bobby J was the DC at San Diego. So look, there's certainly places Idaho can look where Idaho is going to be a representative step up for guys who already have accomplished careers. Hey, Stanley Franks, he had been a defensive coordinator at multiple stops prior to Idaho. Mm-hmm. So look, we've got people who have that background. You know, Eck has other people that will be able to step in, fill these backgrounds. So I guess I'm not anxious about these changes. Although, hey, Eck does have some more things he has to hit on, but he's hit on in the past. The one thing I do want to bring up though, is I think we probably have a couple more guys to look at as leaving or mm-hmm. maybe not leaving, depending on how things shake. I think what Eck does at the defensive coordinator for sure is going to have some ramifications within this group, which is to say, look at a guy like Stanley Franks, who I just referenced. He's been to DC previously. He was the guy who went to the Big Sky Media Day a day before to do the kind of professional development the Big Sky offers for assistants who want to become head coaches. Franks clearly has aspirations above a position coach. So if Eck promotes internally to this position and it's not Stanley Franks, I'd expect Franks is for sure going to be looking elsewhere to further his career. I don't have any inside info on this, but Eck did tell Trevin in an interview that was published today that he doesn't really want to have to blow up the system. It sounds like internal promotions very likely. So I think it's a big decision for Eck. Do you promote Bobby J, who was a successful defensive coordinator at San Diego? Or do you promote a guy like Stanley Franks, who's been with the program a little bit longer, who has that background but doesn't have that immediate FCS for sure experience? That to me is what I'm looking at now, is does Eck look outside? And from that interview with Trevin, it did not sound like for a defensive coordinator, the knee-jerk reaction was to look outside their current group. Mm-hmm. So who steps up to fill that spot? I think that's going to dictate who some of the other coaches are leaving. I think Eck made reference to expecting two more coaches to be gone.
Yeah. Oh, again, we don't know quite who those other two coaches might be, but again, the whole circling this around and putting a pin in it, Brian, is 2 years ago, Jason Eck showed up after, again, the fan base was gone. Any real pride in the football program was gone. Not a whole lot of people cared about Idaho football. We were doing these shows and I'm not going to pretend that we have gotten magically better over the last 2 years, that our numbers have quadrupled. I don't think that was an us thing. I think that probably had a little bit to do with Jason Eck. He talked all about the sleeping giant in that press conference. If Jason Eck left today and Idaho was hiring a brand new coach, that coach would not be saying Idaho's a sleeping giant and it's time to awaken what could be in the Big Sky. That press conference is Idaho made it to the quarterfinals and realistically probably should have made it to the semifinals. Like, this is a completely different program where it is 2 years later from the Eck hire. There is no reason to believe he can't hire good coaches again. He's proven how well he did the first time when this was an infinitely harder job to recruit to.
So, hey, I think that puts a button on it, Dallas. It's pretty clear. If you're listening to the show, I don't know how you can't come away with the fact that we obviously wish dudes coaches stayed as long as they can, but we know this is the nature of the business. This is the nature of successful programs. Mm-hmm. We both trust in Eck's ability to make this hire. He does have to stick the landing, but I feel that Eck has put in a lot of evidence for us that he hires good people. And I don't know why you'd expect that to change. So we have to talk about players, Dallas. But before we talk about players, I need to give you no notice, as always, before I talk about a whiskey that is close to my heart, very often close to my hand in the evening, just Snake River Stampede Canadian whiskey. Look, there's two options. Doesn't matter.
Sorry, technical issues okay. here. Keep going.
That's okay, dude. Sorry, sticking the landing. There's two options for Snake River. You can get the entry-level Snake River Stampede, which is $25.95 a fifth, $45.95 a handle, the only size I buy, which has its double barrel finishes, first fill bourbon, then Oloroso sherry casks. If you're celebrating a big evening, or hey, like the close of the third best FCS 1AA Idaho season in program history, you can grab the 1915 small batch. It's aged in an extra 2 years. It still is that same three grain whiskey, 80% corn, 10% malted barley, 10% rye. It's double barrel finishes, first fill bourbon, then ex Canadian rye whiskey casks. No matter which way you go, you can't go wrong. Give Snake River a shot this week.
Love it, Brian. Let's talk about some of the other transfers out, Brian. Specifically as it comes to players. I'm not going to call him a transfer, but he is opting not to use his COVID year. Again, one of the weirdest aberrations that will ever be in the record books. All those players who got a fifth year just because of COVID. Hayden Hatton not coming back to Idaho next year. Also not, at this point, not going to any other school, opting to go to the NFL draft, Brian. Thoughts on a guy like Hayden Hatton deciding, hey, I played my 4 years here, or I guess 5 years counting the red shirt, played my 5 years here, don't need to use that fifth/sixth COVID year, ready to move on to the NFL.
I'm really appreciative for what we saw out of Hayden Hatton. I understand guys who graduate as grad transfers like Marcus Harris, or guys like Hayden Hatton who, hey, he got his degree, he fulfilled the core obligation, he's a Vandal for life, it was great to have you here. Wish him the best of luck. People move on from college at some point. I know like COVID threw a grenade in how we track players, but dude, he's been on the team for 5 years. You understand a guy saying, hey, what am I supposed to do above what he's already done to improve his draft stock? Plus pro careers aren't that long, guys. If he's going to get paid, he's got to do it now. He chose to not get paid and stay at Idaho the last year. So no, dude, it's just time to go. I'm glad to have you, Hayden. Good luck.
Yeah. And that's the same that you alluded to, Marcus Harris. For anybody that isn't aware, Marcus Harris announced this week that he is going on to Cal, the vaunted Cal Bears defense, which legitimately, not being sarcastic, Justin Wilcox coaches the heck out of that defense. Offensively, they've been kind of a mess for honestly the whole time he's been there, but it's a pretty solid defense that does have guys go to the NFL. Marcus Harris is committed to Cal for his, again, graduated, got his Vandal degree, spent a bunch of time here, and is moving on to spend that one grad year at Cal. And again, for him, I'm guessing, try to take that shot at getting to the next level, which is much easier to do when you're playing for a Pac-12 ACC school than you are a Big Sky school. Captain 58 in the comment section saying, lots of guys go to college for 7 years at SIU. Some of those guys were also there for 8, Captain. Don't forget about that.
Yeah. So, hey, we're on the same page. You graduated. Hey, like, it's a guy out of the program, whatever. Like, the COVID thing's not going to repeat. Marcus Harris has taken a stab at a final year that he would never have had otherwise. So, hey, enjoy. The thing that I think we understand differently is we do have a good number of undergrads out of the program. Now, I really, really going to encourage everyone. Trevin Pixley wrote a kick-ass article this week. His article is over an interview with Jason Eck, and he talks about transfers in and out. There's some things to know about individual players that we'll cover that may have influenced why they left. But the list of undergrad transfers out, say we all know Javonte McCoy, quarterback, Anthony Woods, running back, or Monty Arnold, defensive back, cornerback. He's gone. Arnold's going to Cincinnati. Woods is already committed to Utah. Mervin Kenyon, safety. He's in the portal. Therese Trainer's in the portal. Tagana Cisse, I'm sure I butchered his name. He's offensive lineman. He's in the portal. And then wide receiver, sophomore, Tommy Hauser from Post Falls, who didn't really play much. He's in the portal as well. So look, between the guys who graduate transfers or went pro and guys who were undergrads and the coaches who are leaving, the like national Big Sky narrative about Idaho is essentially that the sky is falling, which I don't subscribe to that whatsoever. Dallas, I want to throw it to you to talk about some of the impact transfers. But before that, in the same way that we felt not that, like, we just feel different about guys who earned their degree and left. I barely even count that as leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I think you gotta, if you're a Vandal and you're anxious, you need to actually parse the list of who's leaving and why. And then that will let you know whether you should be anxious or not. Cause like, hey, Tommy Hauser, look, I like to have Idaho guys on the team. I wish there was a spot for him to play. He obviously wasn't going to see the field in spite of like kicking ass during spring games. If he mm-hmm. wants to play college football, he probably needed to leave, but we didn't lose too much. Tagana Cisse, it sucks to lose depth at O-line, but like Cisse was becoming like the opposition's most valuable player based off of penalties. Plus he missed a ton of time with injury, so he wasn't
even healthy.
Yeah. Couldn't stay that healthy. So, okay, whatever. Like, you're not going to tell me there's no way to replace Cisse's production. Terez Trainer, we know of his potential because he made All Big Sky, but realistically, mm-hmm. he was the number three receiver on this team who by the end of the season, again, like it was a very, very realistic comparison of what was going to be higher in those playoff games, his receiving yards or his penalized yards from personal fouls. So look, we're now paring down this list further and further to some impact guys. Mervin Kenyon missed some time with injury. He was better in his first year than he was last year. So, I mean, he was a solid guy, but there's other guys that saved. Like, we haven't lost. Tommy McCormick, thank God, is still on the roster. Kyron Beecham, thank God, still on the roster. Dwayne McDougal still on the roster. The safeties I would be more concerned about, they're still there. So, okay, we lose some depth of Beecham. To me, not a big deal. I want to throw it to you now about the bigger names.
Yeah, so, and I also want to point out, guys, most of the names that are on this list are not guys that were recruited here by Jason Eck. I've seen people online complaining that, like, oh, these guys are leaving Idaho. Yeah, okay, for a couple of these names, like, yeah, it's unfortunate that Eck brought them here. They've moved on. In certain instances, we're going to talk about where they've moved on to and maybe how much money they've gotten. But for some of these guys, like Terez Trainer, Terez Trainer was inherited by this coaching staff and then immediately got hurt, missed an entire season, and then came back as the number three receiver this year. It's unfortunate about him like moving on, but can you blame the guy? He wasn't brought here by Jason Eck and the staff. He was brought here by the Petrino staff. So he was brought here by a bunch of guys that got fired. Like, this is how the world works now. So with that in mind, let's get to the last three names here, Brian, we haven't really touched on. Two of these guys are Eck guys, and I can see it, you know, having a little bit more frustration that like Eck brought these guys in. And there's a whole staff. It's not just Eck, but it's much easier to just say Eck. Eck brought these guys in. First one, Ormani Arnold. Didn't play a whole lot last year. Started getting some playing time at the end of the year opposite Marcus Harris. And then after the loss to Southeastern Louisiana, Eck even acknowledged, hey, we probably should have been playing this kid more. Sure enough, roll around to 2023. He's mostly playing as the opposite corner from Marcus Harris. Ended up losing a little bit of playing time towards the end of the year as Andrew Marshall really kind of came on. I thought Andrew Marshall, myself, Brian, I thought Andrew Marshall looked better. I thought Andrew Marshall was going to steal this job from Ormani Arnold next year. So, you know, good for him. If that's part of why he was transferring out, thought he had a better shot at playing time elsewhere. But then he goes on and gets an offer from Cincinnati. And Brian, the most interesting thing about this is that Jason Eck pointed it out in an article with our very own Treib. $150,000 for Ormani Arnold to leave Idaho to go to Big 12 Cincinnati. 150 grand.
Look, if Idaho had the biggest NIL like collective in all of the Big Sky, I would not want Idaho paying Ormani Arnold $150,000 out of that collective. I mean, Jason Eck brought it up in the article. Arnold wasn't even like honorable mention in All Big Sky. He was not a freshman All-American, which is not to say he wasn't a good contributor. He was, but if he's going to get offered that, he should take it. Like, you know, some of the guys who left that we'll talk about Giovanni in a second, but there's some guys who left who are probably not going to have pro careers. So if they're going to get paid to play football, they got to leave now. So if you're Ormani Arnold and that's what your offer is, hey, glad to have you for a year. Take it. See you later, dude. But hey, sounds like you and I are not anxious about the loss of Arnold.
No, I think he's going to play. Again, you mentioned Dwayne McDougal. I think he played a little bit of corner and safety. I think he can step in that role. I assuming there's probably going to be a transfer or two at the corner position, just because, again, you're losing your starters there. But no, not too worried about the depth there.
In the article, just to go over transfers into Idaho, which eventually will hit, because like I interviewed Eck a while ago, and he said he doesn't want to add transfers unless they're going to for sure compete for a starting spot. Doesn't really think you can maybe add some depth at the O-line, but you're not going to make an all FCS O-line with transfers. He told Trevin the focal point right now for transfers are wide receivers and cornerbacks.
Yeah, which again makes sense when you just lost your top two corners and your top three receivers. It does make sense. Now, I think personally, I think wide receiver is going to be something that is less impactful as time goes on with Eck. Just take a look at how the roster is constructed and see how many tight ends are in there and how many tight ends have been thrown to in the last 2 years. Have a feeling that we're going to start seeing a whole lot more 12 personnel coming out, maybe even a little bit of 13. But Brian, that moves us on to another skill position where this is maybe the departure that has me the most nervous. I know there's reinforcements coming and good things are said about the guys that are in the rooms, but man, watching Anthony Woods run was so much fun for the 2 years we had him. He announced tonight, just a couple hours before we started recording this, Anthony Woods headed to Utah, again, formerly of the Pac-12, now going to be in the Big 12, if I remember correctly. Your thoughts, Brian, on Anthony Woods moving on from, again, being a all-conference running back here at Idaho to now moving on to the bigger pastures of Utah?
Woods is the one who, right when you hear the name, hurts the most. Because Anthony Woods, I really think there are moments where he papered over the lack of depth on the offensive line. And there were times where, look, the offensive line certainly developed throughout the year, but there are also times where Anthony Woods just made them look better than they were. So that loss, and you saw that in games when Woods had to sit out more for injury, and Romano just, he didn't have the ability to make people miss left, right. So that, look, that's a loss. Now, I will say, I'm not as anxious about this loss because, again, in the interview with Trevin, guys, just read the article, Eck already said who he expects the replacement to be. It's going to be Eli Cummins, who redshirted this past year. He'd been kicked off the team for disciplinary purposes, got back on the team, and has clearly spent a year getting back in the staff's good graces. He's expected to be the bell cow. So Eli Cummins, we saw, is a very good running back in 2022. Knowing that we do have a shifty guy who can catch passes to replace a guy like Anthony Woods, it makes me feel a lot less nervous, Dallas, because we haven't seen Day-Day Buchanan. We didn't see Matheny a ton. Matheny didn't look like he had much lateral ability to make people miss in the very limited amount we saw. But Eli Cummins is, look, if he's up to the level he was 2 years ago, he's going to be one of the more dynamic backs in the Big Sky. So it sucks to lose Woods, but even if Eli Cummins doesn't match what Anthony Woods does, do I believe Cummins can get to at least 80% of that? Yeah, I do, which suddenly makes me not too nervous.
Yeah, for anybody that doesn't remember Eli Cummins, 2 years ago, 2021, the Zach Borish season, as we're just going to call it that, because otherwise it'll turn into a 30-minute diatribe about Paul Petrino trying to burn this program to the ground. Eli Cummins, 373 yards on 71 carries. That's a good for a 5.3 average, and then a touchdown. And we all thought, hey, wow, he looks really good. He should be getting the ball more. Again, this is that end of that Petrino era where it was just like, why exactly is the same play just being called, running it off of the A gap, maybe into a B gap once in a while if we get real crazy, just running the running backs directly at linebackers? Why are we doing this? Part of the thing that we saw was like, Eli Cummins looks really fast. Why is he not getting the ball in space? Why are we not seeing him get moved around? And then 2022 rolls around, he doesn't get a ton of time to start. Because again, Anthony Woods and Roshan Johnson were there, and Anthony Woods had came out of nowhere to look like, holy crap, this guy's going to be one of the best running backs we'll ever see here. And then unfortunately, only 2 years that we had him. But Eli Cummins in 2022, 91 carries, 442 yards, 4.9 average, and 4 touchdowns, kind of exploded in that NAU game. Honestly, looked like a smaller version of Anthony Woods. And Brian, it stinks to say that Anthony Woods is gone and we're not going to see him running around for the Vandals anymore, because he was so much fun. But Eli Cummins is supposedly thrilled to be coming back. Obviously had some issues that required a redshirt this year, but be coming back next year, leading the group. We heard a lot of great things about Day-Day Buchanan. Again, talking about National Signing Day, Martin and I talked very heavily about that last year, that Day-Day looked crazy explosive on film. You think that guy's going to come in as a redshirt freshman, probably serve well as a number two. Again, I know Art Matheny didn't pop necessarily, but you also don't have, like, it's not like every single running back's got to be a lightning bolt. Like, you just don't always have that. Sometimes you got to have the guy that's going to be in there and be the hammer. So I honestly feel pretty good about the running back situation, knowing Eli Cummings is coming back, because again, we've seen it under the Petrino era and the Eck era. The kid can run. Which, Brian, that's going to take us to the big name that I think some people are very nervous about. I think you and I probably fall on the same page of not being quite as nervous. But starting quarterback Javonte McCoy has also entered the transfer portal. Again, for anybody that doesn't remember, Javonte McCoy, third year here, was a Petrino recruit. So please keep that in mind. If there's anybody that's listening to this, like, why is Javonte leaving? He's an award-winning quarterback. I can't believe this college football is falling apart. It's not like he's X guy. Like, he owes nothing to this school. He put together two incredible seasons, led this team to the playoffs back-to-back years, and is probably going to go get a bag to play somewhere else. On3 has him predicted at Oregon State. I haven't heard anything about that. Honestly, it'd be pretty cool if he ends up over there. But, Brian, your thoughts on, again, Jerry Rice Award winner, Vonnie McCoy taking off for greener pastures?
So I'm not 100% on the same page as you on the, like, whatever owes anything means, but that's a separate discussion that doesn't really fit in the timeline we have here. But I'm with you that he has a chance to get money. This is the first time that this has really existed for guys at this level in college football, really ever, to this wide open extent. I don't think McCoy looks like an NFL quarterback. So he should, like, if he can get money, he should. And realistically, mm-hmm. McCoy wasn't the same guy after Montana State that we'd seen the first year and a half of McCoy here. I'm not sold that I don't think if McCoy came back, he for a fact would be the starting quarterback anyway. So if that's part of your math, and I'm not saying it was his, but if that's the reality of your situation, it would be a huge risk for McCoy to not leave. So yeah. I wish him the best of luck. I have a lot of kick-ass memories of Javonte McCoy, but Idaho averaged 23.8 points per game in his last six starts. If that's the offense, if that's the offensive output for a team, I think no one should be considered untouchable, or no one should be considered a guy who can't be replaced. Idaho's best. And I know Idaho State sucks, but, like, the play calling Idaho did with Jack Lane as quarterback was much more diverse than what we saw with Javonte McCoy. The coaching staff has a ton of trust in Jack Lane. So in the same way that I can explain to you who replaces Anthony Woods, I can explain to you who replaces Javonte McCoy. And hey, next year we get to see Jack Lane against good teams. We haven't seen that. That's a realistic question for sure. But at this point, there's no reason to not have a ton of trust in what Jack Lane can do. So I wish McCoy the best. I hope he lands at a kick-ass place. I hope he gets paid. Thankful for his time here. I'm ready for, like Crew Head 76 is saying, I'm ready for Jack Night Train Lane. I'm ready for the Lane era, guys. So that's where I am.
Anything comparing Jack Lane to one of the all-time NFL greats? Heck yeah. But Brian, do you know how many touchdown passes Jack Lane threw this year?
Threw six in one game, right?
He did.
Like, tie the program record?
Yep. In one half. I want to throw that out there. Do you know how many touchdown passes he threw total on the season?
Six.
Nope, because he threw a couple in mop-up duty. He threw, on 32 passes, he threw eight touchdowns this year. On 354, Javonte McCoy threw 15. Now, again, this is Jack Lane has one cleanup touchdown against Lamar, one cleanup touchdown against Cal Poly, six touchdowns against, yes, an Idaho State team that was certainly not Montana State, any of the playoff teams. Obviously not the same. But Jack Lane, as Travis Thompson says in the comment section, Jack Bengal Slayer Lane, that was a better ISU team, Jack Lane looked in full control of the offense, threw it all over the field, threw it to a whole bunch of different guys, which, again, these are things that were kind of complaints about McCoy that I've even said on this podcast. I felt like he was a guy that looked at Hatton, looked at Jackson, and then ran. And I think that that changed over the years and adjusted up and adjusted down and was just not fully consistent. Felt like Jack Lane was just, we're going to get through the read. We're going to find the open guy and I'm going to throw it. I don't care who it is, but that's the open guy and that's where I'm throwing it. That's what it felt like we saw against Idaho State. Brian, I honestly think Jack Lane behind, again, an offensive line we expect to be better than this year's just because that depth is getting older and larger. Again, I know a guy like Tagana Cisse is moving on. Last I saw, he has an offer from Western Colorado, a school, or excuse me, Western Carolina. Ooh, taking it back to the Zach Kloss time already. You can tell where my mind is at. Tagana Cisse has an offer from Western Carolina, which is an FCS school in the SoCon. So it's probably going to stick around at this level, but it's unfortunate to move on from that. But Brian, behind a better offensive line, I feel pretty good about Jack Lane, Eli Cummings. Again, you assume Jordan Dwyer steps in as the number one receiver. You probably see, again, more production out of the tight ends. I know Chance Bogan was a name people expected when he was recruited. He was one of the big guys that people thought would have a huge career here. He's going to be a redshirt sophomore. This is about that time that you'd expect to see a tight end kind of step up. Alex Moore, I believe, is coming back. Looked really good before, unfortunately, had that knee injury that has kind of limited him a little bit over the last 2 years. Brian, the offense was not the strong suit of Idaho this year, and I feel pretty good in the pieces that are coming back to make some sort of offensive improvement from what we saw at the end of last season.
Now, hey, to put it simply and close it out, belief in Jack Lane is absolutely not an evidence-free proposition. When we've seen Lane, yeah, he looks good. A lot of Vandals feel similar to Jack Lane next year as Montana Grizzly fans feel about Kialili Ayat next season, as in, hey, we've seen a promising dude we think can deliver. We've got a year to recruit and support, and then we get to see him again. So, hey, to the guys who left the program, hey, we miss him. We value what they gave to Idaho. You guys can tell from the tone for me in Dallas. Look, Idaho has to get some good recruits to replace some of these guys for sure. But the sexy names, we already know who's replacing them, and we've seen them play well. Where I'm not worried, I think this might mean some of the strengths of the team are different next year because it's not a one-to-one replacement with what the team's going to be. That changes with every team year by year, not just Idaho. But to close it out, if you're a good FCS team, you're going to live through a week like this. Montana State did it before Idaho after Montana State lost in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You can expect, especially if Bobby Houck calls it a year or calls it a head coaching career after this season, you can expect Montana is going to experience the same thing too. And like, hey, our comment section is experiencing it right now. Crewhead 76 has to log out. So this is just how it works. Thanks, Crewhead, for showing up. But hey, we have to rank the Big Sky in a second, Dallas. Before we get there, we need to hear the sultry tones. You got to tell us about, hey, if you're going to go on a river expedition trip, where are you going to go?
If you are looking for a great all-inclusive week-long vacation, don't look past your backyard. Hughes River Expeditions has been Vandalone and operated since 1976, and they're ready to take you on the vacation of a lifetime. Enjoy a multi-day trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River of No Return, the Salmon River Canyons, or the Selway. You can even check out special trips like one to see the Perseid Meteor Shower. Camp on pristine beaches, run amazing whitewater, hike scenic trails, spot wildlife, soak in beautiful natural hot springs. And as always, guys, fish some of the most remote stretches of river in the entire United States. Just bring your clothes, let HRE handle the rest. Grab a paddle, catch dinner, and ride the bull all throughout the Gem State. Call them now at 406-540-4450, or if you like all numbers, 406-540-4450, or you can check them out at HughesRiver.com.
Brian, I love the ongoing narrative of you arguing with someone about the use of numbers instead of letters.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I'm going to get shit for it anyway, so I might as well argue with myself. It's better than arguing with other people. With that said, Brian, we're going to get into the final segment now, grading the Big Sky. And because you're the teacher and the smart guy here, we're going to do this on a curve. So as you have explained to me, that means we're going to give out one A, two Bs, two D's, an F, and then a whole bunch of participation trophies.
Six C's.
As I said, participation trophies.
So, okay. So, hey, Dallas, let's just talk letter by letter, because some of these I think are brain dead. Let's talk about your A. I think there's only one team you can give it to. Montana's in the national championship. They beat the shit out of every single team they played in the regular season after beating Idaho in Moscow. The Grizz have looked at, they just won back-to-back overtime playoff games. The game against North Dakota State was an all-timer, which honestly, the Furman game was kind of an all-timer too. Grizz just sold almost around 26,000 tickets to that playoff game against North Dakota State. Only loss, one loss to Northern Arizona, which obviously, hey, if you're in the championship, it's just a shitty week. Teams have shitty weeks once in a while. I don't know how you give anything but an A-plus to this, and I don't think the Grizz were the curve busters.
Mm-hmm. This is the one that hurts. I hate to say this, but as an impartial, I guess I'm not even impartial because FTG, you can't give anything. If we have one A to give out, it's Montana. This was a squad that I think everybody thought Montana State was going to be the better school, especially Ron Lowney in the comment section. I think everybody thought Montana State was going to be better than Montana this year because they had proven it very, very handily the year before. Thought, hey, maybe Idaho's got a chance to make some noise, but felt like, man, could this be it for Bobby Howe? Because he never going to get in his second go around, is he not going to turn this program into what everybody thought he was going to do when he came back? And then they lost to NAU. Everybody, including me, thought, holy shit, this might be it. The death tones are coming. And then now here we are. Montana's in the national championship game. I can't give it anything other than an A. As much as I might hate it, it's an A, Brian.
Yeah, the Grizz on the season, they've doubled up opponents in scoring margin. It's, again, they beat the shit out of half of their conference opponents. And yeah, hey, just before we write that off, Idaho did not beat the shit out of Northern Colorado. The Grizz shut them out, which is that's not to make that game emblematic of anything, but there's no other team who get an A. So hey, Grizz, congrats, you're still alive. They also they have the benefit of as of our recording, they don't have guys transferring out of the program. If you're in the championship, you do get a few extra days to declare. So the Grizz likely have that day coming, but as of our recording, they don't have it yet. So we can't talk about people leaving being an issue. Dallas, who are your two B's?
So Brian, my two B's are going to be Idaho and Sacramento State. I think Idaho, again, if we're going off of a curve here and Montana's getting the A, I think Idaho had the second best season of anybody in the Big Sky. I think that's, maybe a brain dead thing to say because they made the quarterfinals and had one of the best years in program history. But I think Idaho, we've gone over it many times. Idaho, it's a B. I think Idaho had a great year. Sacramento State, I am going to give a B to as well, because you forget they did have, the top echelon of their roster turned over. They did bring a bunch of talent back, but the top echelon of their roster turned over. Their coach left for the FBS. They promoted their defensive coordinator. They made it into the playoffs. You know, they struggled towards the end there. They made it to the playoffs and they won a playoff game. Like, if you were to tell me right now that Jason Eck was being replaced, Rob Orich is going to take over, and you're going to tell me Rob Orich wins a playoff game in his first year, I take that. That's a pretty damn good season every time. So to me, Sac State gets the other B that I'm going to hand out.
See, I'm with you on Idaho. We recorded an Idaho episode talking about the season where if it's not a curve, Idaho's an A, but yeah, they finished in the final eight. Idaho should have beaten Albany, but hey, to be honest, they should have lost to Southern Illinois too, just based off how the season ended out. So hey, I think Idaho's season reasonably ended where it should have. Third best season program history. Only reason it's not an A is because the Grizz are having a historically good season. It's hard to compete with that. So Idaho, easy number two grade in the class. Sac State, no, they're not a B to me. They finished 4-4 in conference. You're right, they had some adversity they kind of worked through, but they also face planted through a lot of their adversity. So for me, Montana State is who gets my other B. Finished 6-2 in conference. They had some adversity too, and the Cats certainly stumbled at the end of the year, lost their last two games, got the shit being out of him by Montana 37-7 in the brawl, and then lost in overtime to North Dakota State, a very good North Dakota State team who just pushed Montana to overtime too. So, hey, the Bison went 1-1 in OT playoff games against the state of Montana. Montana State did have a lot of guys transfer out. You know, some are going to University of Washington, but hey, Jeff Choate had established a UW to MSU pipeline. It's not shocking. That's going to work in the inverse with some guys like Sebastian Valdez. Wouldn't be shocked to find out a few guys leave the Cats and go to work with Coach Jeff Choate at Nevada, because Choate did, the older guys on the roster would have been recruited by Jeff Choate. But in spite of kind of face planting towards the end of the season, even the Cats face planting, still they should have won their second round playoff game. They annihilated all the awful teams that they played during the season, and they didn't pick up enough wins against good teams, obviously. But because of that, I put them above Sacramento State.
See, and it's funny how we can both interpret how that season went as different things, because I had more of a thought of putting them as a D than I did as a B. Because I think if you ask, again, I know, Ron, you're in the comment section and it's probably tough to respond to this, but I'm going to guess if you asked a handful of Bobcat fans how they think about this season and how it went, I'm going to guess that losing the Brawl of the Wild by 30 and then losing in the, again, it's not the first round, it's the second round, but losing your first game in the playoffs at home in the way that they did because they couldn't find a goddamn kicker to save their lives. Again, this is a team that we're talking about had national championship aspirations, and we even talked about it on the show that if any team was going to beat the Dakotas, it was going to be Montana State, and instead we're talking about they got crushed by their rival at the end of the season and then couldn't win a game in the playoffs. Like, that's that feels like failure to me. But again, I'm also so far removed that an 8-4 season, even with losses like that, is still one of the best seasons I've seen out of Idaho my whole life. So a little bit different to realize that, but to put myself in the Montana State shoes, nothing about this season feels like a pass to me. This feels like a wasted year.
I mean, look, I don't 100% disagree with you there, but like, they finished with a seed. Three Big Sky teams finished with a seed. Sacramento State was one of the bubble teams to get in. So that's why, look, I think if you focus on a couple things at the end, like, or a couple big things, not nothings, but a couple big things for the Cats, I understand your grade. I think there was no comparison of the preponderance of the season. That's why I went Montana State. But that means, hey, we have a slew of teams in the C's. So the C's, you and I both have this typed out. I'm just going to read them out and let you pick a couple that you think are more or less interesting to talk about.
Cool.
So your C's are Montana State, which you already made the case for Montana State. And I made the case, well, I made a different for case.
Sacramento State. Yeah, those are the only C's we have different, is Montana State and Sac State.
Yeah, which, and hey, well, we both made our own case, so we won't talk about those. The other C's are NAU, UC Davis, Weber State, Portland State, and Idaho State. So of that crew, I guess, who stands out for you?
Weber State is the one that stands out to me, because if Weber State didn't have a quarterback problem, I think Weber State gets that other B. I think Weber State gets the B over Sac State and Montana State to both of us very easily, because I think I don't know what Munoz looked like before they started playing him, but I feel like from what we saw out of Kylan Weissner, and I mean, no offense to the kid, I'm sure he's a good kid, but you trot out Munoz out there, you probably win a couple more games, you probably get into the playoffs, and all of a sudden you feel a whole lot better about this season, that Jay Hill moves on, takes some of the defense with him, but the
offensive two more defensive players in the transfer portal, Mark Collins, yeah, and Jack Kelly, but so that's six Weber guys who've left for BYU to play with Jay Hill. Continue. Yeah.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. But Mickey Mantle comes in, is your offensive coordinator for 1 year, gets the head job. They keep the co-DCs to just keep the rest of the staff intact. And then, again, you're talking, if you play Munoz the whole year or you have competent quarterback play the first half of the season, you're talking Weber State is a no-doubt playoff team. That would be, to me, a heck of a season had they just found a quarterback earlier in the half of the year. So Weber State really intrigues me, Brian, because I think that's a C that's trending upward. I think there's other C's that are trending downward in this group. I think Weber is one of those C's that's trending up. You feel pretty good about that C, and you feel pretty good about what you got going into 2024.
Yeah. So, hey, co-sign those points. the C's that I'm paying attention to is one, Idaho State, because Idaho State was just, you know, hot garbage. They were a good story, but I do want to say I think there's a little bit of fool's gold to some of the three Idaho State wins. And if we replayed this season three times, I think two of them, they come away with one win. They got Portland State unhealthy and they got Eastern face planting in a way that may never be repeated. Still a fun story, but we saw in Moscow, there's a long way still to go for the Bengals. Honestly, for me, fingers crossed they get there.
And the other player is in the transfer portal.
So the other two that stand out, UC Davis, because they have a new coach, Tim Plow, they promoted kind of internally. Plow had been at Cal, but he'd previously been the offensive coordinator at Davis before leaving for Boise State. He was replaced by Cody Hawkins. So that's just a thing to pay attention to. I think Davis narrowly missed the playoffs. They lose a coach, but it's a continuity hire, even though it's a dude out of Cal. The bigger one that stands out to me is actually I almost want to give it a C+, is Northern Arizona, because they're turning the page. Northern Arizona finished 500 in the Big Sky, which Sacramento State was 500 in the Big Sky, and Dallas just gave them a B. But I think it was the right call for NAU to move on, because Chris Ball had just been treading water for, what was this, 4 years, 5 years. Not that much had changed in NAU over 4 years. I think ripping the Band-Aid off was the right call at Northern Arizona. When we start to preview the next season, we'll talk about all the new hires, you know, in depth a little bit. But that's what stands out to me about that group of C's, is Idaho State elevates themselves, but I don't think you should buy into that too much yet. And then NAU finally moves on. Like Mark Trivelpiece says, look for Plow King.
That was a response to a joke I made in the comment section, Brian. For anybody that's not listening, because I heard Tim Plow and I immediately just stopped listening to Brian and I went into the classic Mr. Plow episode from The Simpsons. Mr. Plow, that's my name. That name again is Mr. Plow. Probably going to get sued for using that, but then Plow King is the... Anyways, just anybody want to talk 90s Simpsons episode instead of Tubbs at the Club? I could do that for hours. But Brian, we are close to the hour mark. Let's get into our D's and our F, because you and I have the same three teams circled for the bottom of this curve here. I want you to start it off. I don't care which one you start with, but I'd like you to start off one of your D's and give us why.
I went Northern Colorado as one of my D's, and that I think, look, a team wins zero games. How are they not the F? I'll talk about that when we get to our F. But Northern Colorado, look, they did play at home some close games against good teams. Idaho was one of those relatively close games against good teams. The issue with Northern Colorado is they could not score whatsoever. Well, hey, they got rid of their offensive coordinator at the end of the season. So Ed Lamb doing what he needs to. There's some guys transferring out of the program, but when the team wins zero games, you probably should have some guys transfer out of the program. It's probably more an empty roster spot for Ed Lamb is probably more valuable than a roster spot being held by a guy who didn't play or played a little bit for a team that won zero games. So, you know, you want to look at games. Northern Colorado lost by 4 to close the year out against Portland State. They lost by 14 to Idaho, but that was a one score game until that saddest pick six in the history of pick sixes. They lost by one score to Cal Poly. They lost by one score to Sacramento State. They lost by one score to Weber State. That's a lot of games where if they could put any points together whatsoever, this team looks more respectable. So their D is a D-. It's buttressed on moral victories, but that's why.
Brian, I'm actually going to change it up, and I'm going to go with the same D's and F that you did. So we're going to give the same school an F, because after just looking at their schedule, I forgot how bad some of those losses were for the team that we're both going to give an F to. Initially, the team that I gave an F, I gave a D to, just because they are the only team that is in this level that, hey, well, at least they've got the win over Northern Colorado. That's really all we could have said about their season, but looking at their schedule, we'll get into them as the F. The other D I'm going to hand out is Eastern Washington. And Brian, what a what a rough year for Eastern Washington. Got absolutely shellacked by North Dakota State at the beginning of the year, which I will say, Eastern didn't get a whole lot of time to practice for that game because we did have all the crazy wildfires here. Like, I was flying back into Spokane at that around that same time, and I ended up getting a almost full day's worth of flights delayed because of just how impossible it was to be around Spokane. But then follow that up with a double overtime loss on the road to Fresno State. They beat Southeastern Louisiana, who at the time was ranked. They beat UC Davis, who at the time was ranked. They lost close to Idaho, who again was ranked. The season started out really well for them. It looked like, hey, Eastern might be turning it around. Maybe Aaron Best has things on the right track. And then the wheels came off, Brian. They collapsed against Idaho State. They did end up hanging on to beat Weber State in Cheney, but then lost to top five Portland State. They did crush Cal Poly, but everybody does that. And they got crushed by Montana State. They lost to NAU and essentially pissed away a year going 4-7. What started out looking like, hey, maybe there's something here, honestly feels more like if Eastern had some more money, maybe Aaron Best wouldn't be there. It feels like next year is really the linchpin for Best and his future. If he doesn't pull it out next year, feels like this is the end of the Best tenure.
Yeah, because Best has been Eastern for life. Mm-hmm. I look, if there's a guy who's going to get an extra year, I'm happy it's Aaron Best.
100%. I like Aaron Best. I will say that. I like Aaron Best.
You'll never be able to tell me he could not have left Eastern to triple his pay as an O-line coach somewhere.
Oh,
or an 100%. Offensive coordinator. He is absolutely capable in that regard. So, hey, the F is Cal Poly. So Cal Poly, they're 3-8 on the year, but hey, one's an NAIA or something like that win.
Whatever the hell Lincoln is.
Another is a narrow win over a not very good Pioneer San Diego team. Their one win, so they go 1-7 in the Big Sky. They have a 7-point win over Northern Colorado. Here's why, in spite of that head-to-head, Cal Poly is easily my F. Ed Lamb is in year one of rehabbing that program. Cal Poly's in its fourth year or third and a half with the COVID time since Bo Baldwin took over. And now, why am I drawing a blank on the Cal Poly coach's name? It's because I'm old. Paul Wolf. Yeah. Now Paul Wolf's taken over, but this is year 3.5 to 4 of Cal Poly moving to spread. And they're still getting their ass kicked just completely. Look, they even got a former five-star quarterback, Sam Heward, to transfer in. And Heward certainly, look, he has talent for sure. Like, not trying to write that off. But the issue for Cal Poly is it doesn't really matter who their quarterback is if they are going to surrender 39.5 points per game. They're just going to lose. And if you want to talk about just the inability to stop the run at all, Cal Poly, they've been atrocious on the ground for a while. They just don't have the guys defensively. I don't think they're going to be able to recruit the type of offensive line there's a reason that Cal Poly ran a triple option for a long time.
Yeah.
Their O line's not particularly strong. Their defense is atrocious. They can pass, but their offense obviously isn't enough to make up for this. And all that's to say, in 3.5 or 4 years, depending on how you count, Cal Poly is barely on paper ahead of where Northern Colorado is in year one. So with that much extra time, getting their ass kicked the way they did for much of this season, no, dude, Cal Poly run away F.
Yeah, no, I initially went with it like, Cal Poly did get a win in conference. They beat Northern Colorado. That was my initial, I mapped out my grades for this bell curve right before the show. I guess not right before the show, but a little bit before the show, I went and mapped them out. And I'm like, oh, Cal Poly beat Northern Colorado. I can't rank them behind them, can I? But then when you actually get into it and look at it, Brian, like you said, they beat Northern Colorado by a touchdown at home on family weekend. They beat, again, San Diego non-scholarship Pioneer League. Lincoln, who is technically an independent school, according to Wikipedia, they are trying to join the NCAA in some form or fashion, but have not been able to do that so far in their 3 years that they've existed. Then you're looking at, okay, well, let's get into score margins here. Sacramento State, who, again, had some quarterback issues at the end of the year, but second to last game of the year, they lost to Sac State by 11, so that's technically a two-score game if you think that Cal Poly can score a two-point conversion. And then you're looking at everything else being a three-touchdown or more game in every other loss, Brian. We're talking the next best loss they have is Weber State at the end of the year where they lost by 27. Like, when you're circling that's the best loss on their schedule, and then UC Davis by 28. Yeah, Brian, there's no way to give this anything other than an F. Now that I'm actually looking at it, this team got absolutely blown apart by everyone except Northern Colorado, a non-Scully Pioneer League, and then a team that's not even in the NCAA or NAIA, just an independent team trying to figure out how to play football.
And hey, I'm glad you brought that up, because I made the mistake of looking at overall conference stats, and that Lincoln game radically inflated Cal Poly's overall numbers. The Mustangs averaged 19 points a game in Big Sky play and gave up 43.
Yeah,
they're miles away from okay.
Yeah, at least with Northern Colorado, you have a little bit of hope. We talked about it in the preview shows at the start of the year. Hey, Paul Wolf obviously built Eastern before Bo Baldwin was there. He's been with Bo Baldwin here at Cal Poly for quite a while now. Maybe with Baldwin leaving and essentially most of the staff sticking around, maybe this is where we're going to start seeing strides. And we didn't see strides. We didn't. It's tough to argue really anything other than that when you've got one win against the conference opponent and then you've lost every other game by two scores or blowout scores. With that said, Brian, I think that's about everything we've got. We ran a little bit late tonight, guys, but thank you for hitting us or letting us hit you with, again, coach talk, transfer talk, just talking about the Big Sky as a whole. We've got Martin tomorrow, giving you all the recruiting talk you're going to need to find out about the 2024 class of Idaho Vandals. Don't forget, guys, patreon.com/tubsatthclub. That's where we break some of this news. Again, some of you might be hearing that Rob Warch and Thomas Ford left for the very first time. If you were a member of patreon.com/tubsatthclub, again, it costs $2.50 a month at the lowest tier to get in. You would have heard about this stuff well before.
You can always do more than $2.50. But like you said, Dallas, yeah, so that's why it was kind of weird for it. The tone of us bringing it up initially felt weird, because for us and in the patron group, Ford and Orch leaving is old news. Hey, if you're in the patron group, you got a tip about the next dude who might be out already.
You got other tips that we can't talk about on this show right now. So with that said, guys, thank you for your support. We've had a fantastic year. It's a bummer that football is over, but 2024 is going to bring us some nice, shiny new toys, I think. And with that said, Brian,
time to shift to basketball after Martin's episode, and go Vandals.
Go Vandals.
Go Vandals. Go Vandals. Go Vandals.
This is producer Brian doing a terrible job of even finding what we're going to play us out with. So we're just going to call it good. See you guys Tuesday.